I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World. The West African nation of Guinea is the epicenter of what's now the worst outbreak of Ebola ever. Dr. William Fisher of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, has just returned from Guinea. He says the village of Gekadu, where he tended to Ebola patients, is a world away from the intensive care units he's accustomed to working in.
In the ICU, I'm totally dependent on my senses, the sense of smell, the sense of touch, sight, hearing. And in Gekadu, all of those senses were limited. We wore at the base layer a layer of scrubs and thick rubber boots that reached up to our knees. And on top of the scrubs and thick rubber boots, we wore an impermeable Tyvek suit, which basically covered up every inch except for our hand. We wore our hands and our head. We wore two pairs of rubber gloves over our hands. And then we had an impermeable hood that went on top of the Tyvek suit to cover our head. We wore a respirator over our mouth and nose, and then a pair of heavy-duty goggles on top of the hood so that literally not an inch of skin was exposed. And so you couldn't hear as well. The goggles would get fogged up very quickly, so you couldn't see as well. Your ability to communicate was limited because of the respirator. People couldn't tell if you were smiling or frowning or displaying signs of concern. And your touch was extremely limited because you now had two pairs of gloves on that inhibited your ability to sense change in temperature, a change in pulse. It's incredibly suffocating to be in there. And so our dwell time, the amount of time that we were able to remain inside, was extremely limited to about 45 minutes on a warm day, at the best an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Now, it's interesting. You can see photos of Dr. Fisher at PRI.org, and you do sort of look like an astronaut or somebody who's been hired to remove asbestos. But you also talk about how wearing all that gear really affected you emotionally about how much you could sort of reach these patients you're dealing with in this really dire situation. They're incredibly sick, and you're really prevented from connecting with them at some level with all that gear on.
Yes. I mean, medicine at its core, and especially critical care medicine, for me at least, is a deeply personal endeavor. And I don't think you can do this job without becoming personally connected to the person that you're caring for. And these clothes made it very difficult to establish that level of trust between provider and patient. But the suit also gave us some sense of security. The routine of putting it on and the routine of taking it off also gave us some comfort knowing that we were doing everything that we could to keep ourselves safe so that we could see more patients.
Now, you talk about a particular case of a little boy that you were trying to save, and his story sort of illustrates one of the larger challenges at treating Ebola. Can you tell us about him?
Sure. He's a 9-year-old boy who had been locked in a house with his mother for about 4 days prior to coming to the treatment facility, mainly by his family and the surrounding village because they were so scared that they were infected. The mother had previously participated in a burial, and part of that ritual involved cleaning the body of the deceased, which is one of the major points of transmission for Ebola. And so they were transported from this locked room to the treatment facility in the back of a pickup truck, and you can only imagine what it was like for that boy to be sitting in the back of a truck with his mother, who died on transit. It catches you, and so we brought him into the facility, and he barely had a pulse, and he was so scared that It was just brutal emotionally, and so we were able to get his pressure back with fluid resuscitation. So we were giving him a lot of fluids, IVs. We started him on antibiotics, tested him for malaria. We just initiated care and just tried really hard, worked really hard to try to gain some trust from him. And when we rechecked his pressure and it was much more robust than it had been when he arrived, it gave me this sliver of hope. This you just felt like you had a chance. You had something to bite on, and it was a false hope. And that night, this little boy started vomiting blood and started having significant amounts of blood in his diarrhea, and despite aggressive attempts at trying to keep him alive, he um, by a number of people. He passed away that night. For me, that was just represented such an ultimate failure that we lost a little boy. Not just that we lost a little boy. I mean, he had an incredibly lethal virus, and there had been a tremendous delay in his presentation. So, you know, we didn't have much of a chance when he came in. But it was the way that he died that troubled me.
It's just such a tragic story. But I think the other thing that came through in how you wrote about it and conveyed it was that it's part of the sort of stigma problem in treating Ebola if they had gotten him to your care earlier. But because there's such a stigma, he's isolated. So that delays treatment. That really came through in your,
absolutely,
your writing.
I think the fear about this virus is such a huge barrier to delivering effective care. I mean, it almost prevented me from going in the first place. And I think that destigmatizing this infection, while respecting it at the same time, I think is a critical piece to solving these epidemics.
What also came through is that being right there on the front line of this in tough working conditions, very crude kind of health facility, you actually think that there are ways to deal with Ebola. So there was a sort of a bit of optimism through your experience that I gathered.
Absolutely. Reading about Ebola stateside, I always just said, gosh, we need an antiviral. We need a specific drug that's going to target this virus to reduce mortality, or we need a vaccine to prevent these infections in the first place. But having been there, having seen what aggressive clinical care can do, I'm totally committed to the fact that we can reduce mortality now, which will, like you said, improve trust with the community and hopefully speed up the transfer of sick patients to the facility, which will decrease transmission and give that patient the best chance of surviving.
I just want to end by asking you what you felt you were able to provide patients, not in a clinical way, but just as a person there in the room helping. Did you find that despite all the clothing and despite the barriers that you were able to provide comfort to the patients you dealt with?
You know, I think one of the hardest things for me is that I returned with so much guilt about how little I felt that I had done. I know that I can do more. It's tough. I mean, there were absolutely some patients that I felt were comforted by us being there.
Do you think you'll go back?
Absolutely. I would love to go back. We're talking about a redeployment right now.
William Fisher is a critical care physician at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. He's just returned from Guinea in West Africa, which is the epicenter of the largest outbreak of Ebola ever. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Dr. Fisher. Thank you so much.
Carol, thank you so much for having me.